Howdy, howdy, and welcome back to the Sexual Healing Podcast from Top to Bottom, where these two black gay 40-somethings talk about all topics from the top of your nappy head to the bottom of your crusty-ass feet, and we make a few stops in between as well. But we cover black gay male issues in full, having those conversations out loud that you might dare to have in your head. So I am one of your hosts, Dr. Pookie, and at my side is...
Dark Boy.
Welcome in, Dark Boy.
Yes, thank you.
So how you feeling this morning?
I'm good. I am rested. I am relaxed. I have a lot to do later on, but I'm good.
Okay. I am the direct opposite.
Oh, I was just going to ask, how are you doing?
I am neither rested nor relaxed, and I'm going to try my very best not to do a damn thing later today. Yeah, because, you know, went to the Dodger game last night, my third live game with them, and they finally won while I was in attendance.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, the first two
third
times.
Time.
Yeah, third time was a charm.
At
least this time, I did not go with my mother, who was rooting for the other team and antagonizing all the diehard Dodger fans. I was like, Mama, you know, you can talk some shit now, but you can't get that far out of control. But she was like, well...
Yeah, you're in Dodger town, so maybe...
Exactly. I can't remember who they played that night, though. But, yeah, she was sitting there talking all kind of shit and rooting for the other team. I was just like, Lord, this woman gonna get us jumped trying to get out of Dodger Stadium. But, you know, it was fun. And we had good seats, too, that night. But, yeah. So, alrighty. But, so how was the week for you? You all rested and relaxed and things.
Yeah, you know, work was fine, you know. Changes as usual. But, you know, again, I've caught up for my, the backlog that I had from being on vacation. So, I'm like... Mm-hmm. Everything's good. My husband, he's caught up with his work too, so.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it's like, okay, you know, it was good.
It seems like
now we're trying to plan the next one.
Yeah, it seems like he's never allowed to catch up with his work. It's like,
no.
As soon as he makes some headway, they're like, oh, here's some more shit you can do.
Yep.
Oh, well, good for him, because, you know, I know it could be rough out there.
And it was, you know. He seems more relaxed, too. You know, the vacation was good for both of us, I have to say. It was good.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what a vacation is supposed to do. And, yeah, because I have my trip coming up, and it seems like it is definitely more a source of stress than anything else right now for me. But I'll get it together. You know, it'll come back together, so... I don't know. So I guess we'll get into it, because we're trying to be a little more intentional with having... more succinct episodes, I guess, is a good way to put it. So, one thing that will certainly help us out this week is that we've not quite hit our stride with recording again. So, we are blacklistless this week.
Yes.
We could not decide on a topic. And I swear, every time I read through our list of things that we had brainstormed, I was like, I don't like none of these this week. So, it's just...
I was so relaxed, I... You know, didn't do my job.
Yeah.
Didn't do part of my job.
Well, was there something you came across or read this week that you said, that's some of the blackest shit I done seen?
Not really.
Not really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought I might try that and see if that jogs something for you. But, yeah, I mean, outside of, you know, my podcasting rotation, nothing else really jumps to mind. I don't know. Do you listen to Ratchet Ramblings? I can't remember if you listened to that one.
No, I probably should, but I have not listened to them yet.
Okay, yeah. Because, see, that show, it's all about them, you know, roasting and cracking jokes on the folks in the Black Reality series, particularly, like, Love and Hip Hop and Black Ink Crew. And if you don't watch the shows, just some of the shit they say will have you scurrying to Google so you can see, what does this person look like? And, you know, they said one guy had a face for radio, and I looked him up, and I was like, well, yeah, I would not call him traditionally attractive by any stretch, but I didn't think he looked that damn bad, but, you know, that's me. But, yeah, that is definitely some of the Black-ish I listen to every week, because they cut up so badly on that show, and I love every moment of it.
Well, I need to add them to my rotation, do a sample, see what they're like.
Yeah, because you get Trillificent in full bloom.
Okay.
Because, you know, on his show, Gay Side Stories, he's a little more the, you know, respectable host, in as much as he's going to be respectable. Because I think he enjoys being crazy. And he's more issue-driven. But on Ratchet Ramblings, he's able to just kind of let loose and just say crazy shit, because that's probably what's in his head most of the time. And I do love that version of Trillificent. Although I don't know if I live tweeted them this week, but the title of this week's episode was Pickled Dolezal.
Oh, God.
And I forget why they said that. It was Curtis, because he keeps some of his utterances have basically been the titles of like the last three episodes that I definitely remember. Where he's, you know, like the one before that was Pussy Payments, but you have to listen to it to hear how he says it, because that shit had me howling. And I was at the coffee house, and folks looked at me like, what is wrong with him now? And I'm like, y'all see I have headphones on? You know, it's like, y'all need to leave me alone when I'm here hollering.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, I think also Dear White People on Netflix. I was watching an episode of that, and I was just like, that's some black shit. So those would be my two things that jump out at me this week of just like, ooh, that's very black. In all those stereotypically lovely ways. But yeah, so I don't know. But okay. So did you have anything else you wanted to add before we jumped into our topic?
Well, the woman who was pardoned by 45.
And yes, that was just nice.
It was nice to see how happy she is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for being, you know, being released out of from being in prison for 21 years.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I saw a part of an interview with Kim Kardashian that she was doing with Van Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, she seemed so like, I don't know, like, She didn't take the credit for it. She was saying like that this is something she's been working on for 7 months, which I didn't think that she had the attention span to work on anything. You know what I mean? Work on anything for that long. So I thought, okay, well, she did good, even though it had to be with, you know, this president, and it had to be, you know, her husband is, you know,
acting a fool.
Yeah.
Well,
but I thought, okay. So. Yeah.
And maybe he's being honest. Who knows? I mean, who is the real Kanye?
I don't know.
I do think, speaking on Kanye, I think he's definitely not been the same since his mama Donda died. And brother needs some serious couch time and some meds. I just feel like he can have a conservative viewpoint, but some of the stuff he's saying is just intentionally inflammatory. And it's the kind of thing a black mama would slap you upside the head for saying. But I think also, speaking on 45 and his pardons, it's almost seems to me like he has found something to do, because he's not really putting any work into policy decisions that he's making. It almost strikes me as like, oh, here's a new shiny toy I can play with.
Yeah, that could be, yep.
Yeah, it just really, I mean, especially this whole thing with Muhammad Ali and the fact that Ali was already, his conviction was overturned, and so were several other people that had selective service convictions and things like that. I'm just like, why are you doing that? Are you trying to curry favor with the black community? Because you know we can't stand your ass? Like, what are you trying to do here? It seems to me that he's basically campaigning already for re-election, and he just continues to do everything the absolute wrong way, or perhaps not wrong, that could be my value judgment, but he seems to do everything in a non-traditional way. You know, commenting on jobs reports before they're actually released, taking credit for somebody else's work. It's just, you know, I'm like, yeah, black unemployment numbers are at their lowest in history, but they were going down before you went into office. This is a continuation of a trend. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know. I saw a couple articles they were saying that number, it's like, yeah, it's lower, but it's also misleading. And I wasn't able to finish the reading to really understand why it was misleading. But I know employment numbers, they can fluctuate very wildly. So maybe that has something to do with it. But who knows? But yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, but that thing, I don't want to give him any more attention. you know, I'm just a president that eats that much McDonald's is frightening to me. They should know better. I don't know. But respectability has been a huge part of the presidency for so long that someone that crass and quote unquote, I don't think I would even call him regular. He's just crass. But it's really unsettling to have someone with that sensibility in the office. I'll put it that way. But alrighty, this is not necessarily a political show.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm going to climb up off that box.
That was just something that I had just been reading and just, you know, involved another, you know, a black person getting out of prison, you know. So that's...
Oh, yeah, that
was basically the blackest thing I had heard about all week, you know.
Yeah, and the crazy part is I just realized that was the original topic. I love that she was released. I don't know the details of her case, but I do know it was a nonviolent drug offense, and it was she got caught up, I guess, in the war on drugs and mandatory minimum sentencing at the federal level, and the fact that they put her in prison and they were like, "You gonna die in here." That just, especially when you got white boys out there selling weed making shitloads of money now. Just that, yeah, that is just the epitome of white privilege. But all right, but you know, folks don't want to see that. They don't want to see that. But I love that the sister was released, that she's back with her family, because she's a great grandmother, isn't she? I know she's at least a grandmother. Yeah, it's like, how you gonna have somebody great granny in jail like that? And she didn't, you know, well, I won't say she didn't do anything. She did something, but yeah, I don't think it was definitely not worth 22 years of her life. That's some bullshit. But I certainly hope that our, you know, our guy filling the oval will get back to learning how to truly do his job. Because he just doesn't seem to be doing a very good job, so... And unfortunately, we all need him to do a halfway decent job, or we're kind of fucked as a country. So, I don't know. But okay. I just went off on a tirade. Alrighty. So, alright, was that your
that was it.
That was your last black thing? Okay.
That was it.
Alright. Okay, so this week we thought we'd talk about perfectionism, and this one we didn't want to box it in too much. We had a couple of things that, you know, that both of us read, and we'll just kind of go from there. But, you know, perfectionism and black gay men, how is that showing up, and how is it impacting us as a community? So, I know you had some thoughts on some of the material that we kind of shared. Did you want to start out, Dark Boy?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the article about Mapplethorpe.
Yes,
is that the one you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I read that article and I thought it was. I will say I have followed Mapplethorpe since, you know, went back when he was still alive, mm-hmm. you know, and there was a controversy over his exhibit that was traveling around the country or whatever, and people were up in arms, and, you know, so I kind of followed him since then. And so his pictures, well, I mean, I think people only focus on the naked pictures that he did of men, but I mean, he did flowers, and he did, there was a woman that he was really close to, and he took a lot of pictures, naked pictures of her too. Mm-hmm. But I think some people think that he, the article was kind of saying, the article was about objectification of black men. And so that, I guess that he might have been a participant of it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of sort of disagree with it, just because I'm like, well, he took, the people he took pictures of were people he was dating. And so there was the one black guy, and there were two other white men. And so they were all in those pictures. So it wasn't like he was just selectively picking black men and just only making them about their penis or whatever, because, you know, he did that to the white guys too. I mean, I think there's one picture of a white guy called Mr. 10 and a half, where all you see is a white man in a jock strap, you know, and his stuff looks quite large in it. So, I mean, mm-hmm. So it's just weird. So, the one thing I did want to say is that when I saw those pictures of, this was the picture of the black guy, and I don't remember his name. Seeing his picture when I was, you know, I don't know, this had to be, what, 20 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That was the first picture that I had seen that actually made me wish that my skin was darker.
Hmm.
You know, because these guys, you know, the guys he took pictures of were very good-looking mm-hmm. guys. And so here was a black guy that was good-looking, and his skin was very dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, wow. And that was the first thing that I remember that kind of countered this thing where, well, light skin's better, the lighter the better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was kind of saying I disagreed with the whole objectification, because it's like, well, no. Or perfectionism. I mean, you know, the guy he could have looked like, I don't know, the black version of Harvey Weinstein. Like, maybe I wouldn't have liked it, but, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, and I mean, I think certainly the idea of, I'm kind of skimming through some of his other work, just kind of like a retrospective here, and it definitely seems like the bodies are all this very slender. I'm not seeing any overweight folks in any of his work here.
Yeah, I think there were men that he dated.
Yeah, but I mean, even the other stuff of men that he hasn't dated, everyone, at least his erotic photography, you know, they're very slender. The muscles are evident. Yeah, black or white. He even has a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger here from back in the day.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it was an interesting thing, because I remember once upon a time, because I love F. Six Hemphill's writing. He's definitely one of my writing idols, so to speak. He and Joseph Beam, as well as Marlon Riggs, who didn't do as much writing as much as he did filmmaking. But I definitely remember them taking issue with his work back in the day, because a lot of the men, particularly in his most notable exhibit, I think, was it in Cincinnati where all that stuff blew up? Where the black men, they were just kind of slabs of meat, so to speak, because they were headless. And that might be because they were his lovers and they didn't want to have their faces attached. And it just...
Yeah, some of them... Yeah, some of his people didn't want their face and their dick pics. They didn't want their... They wanted them separate. I think there were one or two that wanted them like that. They didn't want to have a full-on nude that showed their body from head to toe. I think that's how some of them were.
Yeah, and I think that's even really curious, because you have a situation where by and large, and it's probably cultural, that a lot of black gay men can embrace their bodies in full. Even, you know, this guy, I forget what his name was. I think it was Morris or something like that. But it's like, obviously, the dick is quite impressive. And so, you know, and certainly we're talking about in the late 70s, 80s. It was a little different, you know, particularly for black men and black gay men, whether it was the idea of being very open and overt about the fact that you're in a relationship with a white man. But it was also just this idea of trying to uphold this image of black masculinity. And I feel like in some ways it's an exercise in futility, because you have to have this perfect image. You know, you have to look a certain way, you got to walk a certain way, and
or act a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, you have, you know, you now have what, you know, what some people are calling effeminophobia going on, where you just have more feminine leaning men in appearance, in mannerisms and characteristics that are really kind of being shamed for being who they are. And as a community, by and large, you have this emphasis on the masculine ideal and this idea of being, what is it, the homo thug? That was a big trope that kind of came out of the white gay community that's definitely, I would say, infected a lot of brothers on this side, where they are emulating men that probably want nothing to do with them, and yet they seem to be, this masculine homo thug image certainly seems to be more valued, and guys are working very hard to perfect the look and the mannerisms, and if they fall short, they're less valued.
I mean, I would say definitely, like, the same article mentioned, or the other article I think mentioned about the femme shaming. I guess if you're more feminine, then you're not considered the perfect gay man.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I feel a little bit out of the loop on that, because I mean I'm certainly not the most butch person, but I mean I'm also not dating, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm married, so I feel out of the loop, so I guess I don't really realize how bad that part of it is. I do see a lot of articles or references to, you know, people wanting masculine type of men only. I do see that, but I don't know on what scale that is. You know what I mean? Just because I'm not looking for anybody, so I'm not really seeing the full extent of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty significant. I mean, as someone who's not actively out there in the dating world, because I just don't have time in general, and I certainly don't have time for the foolishness that, you know, that ensues in those spaces a lot of the time, there is definitely a very big emphasis on having the more traditional masculine look and mannerisms about you. I think, looking at how it's kind of manifested in the larger gay community, you have like the gay bros, as they call them. And you know, it's interesting because my mind goes back to a time when we were traveling. You and your hubby arrived at my hotel room, and I was watching a college football game, and I was like, I'm not leaving until this game is over.
Yeah.
And your husband was like, I'm taking your gay card for this. And I'm like, are you serious? You know, and I could tell he kind of was. And I just said, wow, so I can't watch a football game? Like, I'm a college football nut. Why can't I watch a game? And it's somehow just, it was somehow less gay. It just wasn't perfectly gay. I don't know. I'd have to ask him to have him defend himself on the scene. But it just struck me as really humorous because I was like, I'm not getting up till this game is over. There are 3 minutes left, and I'm not trying to hear it. So
well, you know, I can't say for most. For me, there are very few gay men that I know that are into sports, and that's probably a leftover from being in school, and you know, because I was not good at sports at all. So for me, sports doesn't have like this. It's not like it's this thing that I, you know, am fascinated with every single weekend. So I think for a lot of gay people, just sports just isn't even part of their thing. Kind of like how church isn't really for a lot of people, for a lot of gay people either. You know, yeah. It's like, okay, well, church, you guys did us wrong with all this craziness, so we ain't gonna do, you know, we're not trying to be around you guys. So I think probably sports is kind of the same way, but just different because it was our own, you know, it was just from high school or from school if you weren't particularly good at it. So I think that's probably what he, I mean, guessing that's probably what he meant. I kind of remember this.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that just stuck out in my head to this day. And I'm always like, okay, that was interesting. But I'm still not getting up. Like, you know, because I mean, I'm a fan. And I was sitting there hollering at the screen. And he was just like, you know about this shit, don't you? I said, yes, I do. I was like, although my boycott of the NFL will be starting its second year, but you know, I'm still watching the college game, although they're probably worthy of a boycott as well. That's a bottle I have to work very hard to wean myself off of. I'm not quite ready to give that up, but I probably need to. But that's another story altogether. But yeah, yeah. Just, you know, just this idea of... And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, is it perfectionism or is it us as a community kind of policing one another and peer pressuring one another into being a certain way or meeting some sort of ideal? You know, I think it's really... I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know if it's necessarily policing each other. I think it's probably... I think it's probably the pressure, kind of like peer pressure, you know? And when I think of this, I think of like, you know, the going to the... You know, people who go to the gym, who work out, and... Because I think that's the one thing that... Well, one of the things that we differ in straight relationships, because it's two men, so... So it's easy for me to say, well, you know, you got to go to the gym because if you work out this much, this is gonna happen. And I think normally, and for heterosexual relationships, I think it's just different. I mean, I don't know how women's bodies respond to going to the gym. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. Within reason, but it's just like you could go to the gym together, you could work out together, and I don't necessarily know very many straight couples that where that happens. So I think it's that peer pressure. Like there's no excuse. You know, there's no excuse for, you know, I'm not really putting my thoughts together very well, but I'm like, I just think it's that peer pressure. Well, I think it's, go ahead, Sarah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, going to, for example, the game last night, I noticed because it was LGBT night at Dodger Stadium. And so you had this interesting mash of, you know, the LGBTQ community kind of merging with the typical Dodger fan. And so, and I just remember when we were taking the shuttle up to the stadium, I said to a mutual friend of ours who I went up there with, and I said, are these guys in the back row gay or not? Because like one of them was obviously like this little cub. He was clearly gay. I mean, both of us clocked him immediately. but the two friends that he was with, they were both kind of plus size Latino guys, you know, bearded. They definitely would qualify as bears, but they had a lot of the mannerisms that you couldn't distinguish them from the other, you know, straight Latino guys that were getting on the shuttle with us. Like, these three big guys were sitting in the back row of the shuttle, and the one other, this other Latino guy gets on with his maybe younger brother or a nephew maybe, and he says, is there room back there for five? Like, and he's kind of asking the question, but it's really a statement, because he's like, you guys are moving over and we're sitting down. And I mean, it was very odd, because I don't know if it was situational, because guys don't like to be up on one another like that, unless, you know, they are attracted in that way, or they have that level of intimacy. But you had these five guys. The smallest was probably this husky kid, who was probably about 13. They're all slammed together. And I thought to myself, well, we know the guy on the end is gay, but these other two, and then the new two, what's the deal there? Like, you couldn't distinguish them. And I was wondering to myself, like, are these other two guys that we did realize are gay, were they kind of bushing it up, or is that really how they are? Because it was just, you couldn't distinguish between them. And it just struck me as very odd. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, is that them, or is that going to the Dodger game drag? Like, what's the deal here? Because there's definitely a uniform, you know. The guy that we knew was gay, he was wearing a button down and some shorts. Like, it was like when we saw him walking, we both kind of laughed to ourselves, like, yeah. But the other two also had on shorts and t-shirts that were kind of irreverent, and I was like, and hats, and, you know, baseball caps, and it was just kind of like, but when we saw them walking, we were like, yeah, queens. Just
by the way they walked?
Yeah, it was just like, okay, yeah. It's like, so what we're seeing here in the parking lot kind of belies what we just saw on the bus. and it's just like, I got the impression that particularly the biggest one of the three friends, he kind of practiced his stuff, because he got up and, you know, when he stood up, he was kind of giving a lot of that stereotypical masculine energy and his pose and all that. But once he got off the shuttle and was kind of out in open space, you know, he was a little more soft with his body and mannerisms. And I just said, wow, okay. So it's like, so you can't do much about no fats, but you can certainly do something about no femmes. Right. Yeah, it was, I feel like this is just all very tangential today in the conversation, but hey, we're just rolling with it. Because the thing that I think I mentioned this to you before we started recording, that when I thought about the topic of perfectionism and black gay men, I did a Google search, and I really didn't find very much. And yet, as a raging perfectionist myself, I know there has to be, I have to have a tribe out there. And I just found it interesting that there really weren't any notable think pieces that immediately came to mind around this topic. It struck me as odd. Because there are, I see perfectionism almost as a gateway to mental instability, shall we say?
I thought you were going to say being obsessed.
That's instability.
I suppose.
You know, I mean, it's definitely a part of the equation. And it was just very interesting that I didn't find very much. And maybe I didn't do the most thorough search, because it was a crazy week. But I mean, when I do a search, it's Ah, okay. Now, see, now I find something. A slightly different search, and there's an article here. Charles Stevens, he wrote the Mapplethorpe piece that I think you mentioned. I think that was Charles who wrote that. He did a piece here on perfect black gay men on being thrice as good. And you know, he wrote that back in July of 2015. But he's talking about Atlanta, and he starts out by saying Atlanta is the city of perfect black gay men, or rather the illusion of perfection. Perfect bodies, perfect jobs, perfect homes, perfect cars, perfect clothes, perfect credentials, perfect boyfriends. And if you're not yet perfect, you better be working toward it, always. And the thing that, and this is kind of what I had in mind when I thought about this topic, just the idea of what are we as black gay men called to be by the larger black community? And also within the larger gay community, and then within the smaller black gay community. I've had those encounters with folks where you might walk up to someone and say hello, and they kind of look you up and down like, bitch, you are not thin enough to be with me. You are not muscular enough to be with me. And I'm kind of like, wow, okay. Just said hello, wasn't trying to fuck you, not my type. I don't want you. But because you feel like you have this tight little body, I'm supposed to want you. And yeah, I mean that's more when I think about perfectionism within our community, that's kind of what comes to mind. I don't know if you've encountered
Yeah,
that.
because I mean, I could see people. I haven't experienced that, but I mean, I could see people. You know, somebody that is, you know, if they're all worked out and they're all like, and they're putting on this illusion that they have the perfect life, that somebody that they think is not doing as well or not as perfect as they are, I could see them kind of shunning and saying, well, you know, giving someone that look like, why are you talking to me or something. You know what I mean? I can see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean it's definitely very interesting to me because I've had encounters, because I'm not the most outgoing, bubbly personality, and so every now and then I'll get a wild hair up my ass when I'm online, and I will just approach people to start up conversation, not so much for the purposes of like, I'm trying to get with you, but just for the purpose of starting a conversation. I'll see something in someone's a profile that they have, or like a Twitter post they've made, and I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. This seems like a really, you know, a really fun person. It'd be really cool to talk with them. And you get this response that's really kind of off-putting at times, to me at least, where they're just like, oh my God, why are you talking to me? And it's like, you know, you see what I look like, and you're not up to par, so why are you ch and I mean, one guy actually said to me, like, I don't look, you know, you don't look anything like you're on my level, so I don't know why you're trying to talk to me. And I'm,
Oh, really?
yeah, and I said, first of all, don't want you. I said, you made this comment and I agreed with you, and you know, you went on a Twitter rant about it, so I thought you might want to continue the conversation, but clearly you are faking the funk because you know, it was just I was kind of dumbfounded by it. The response was just really strong, and I said, so we have to be perfect now. We have to match you perfectly for you to even have a conversation with us. Is that the demand in the community now? Because if that's the case, that's really short-sighted and very unhealthy. So,
Yeah,
I
I
don't
mean,
know.
that's just a terrible thing. I mean, and I think, gosh, you know, I'm trying to think if I had a story anything like that. I mean, I could see I've known people that could do it, like have done that type of thing if they have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you don't have money that the money that I have, so you know we're not on the same level. I could mm-hmm. I've seen that. But yeah, I mean, of course, it makes complete sense, and I'm sure it happens all the time with looks wise or body type or whatever, and. Mm-hmm. I don't know, and I think one of the articles was talking about that there are people that are like, you know, because there are guys like, I think sometimes people, if they like bears, I think sometimes they are made to feel like they can't be public with that, like they shouldn't be public with it, so it's all like on the DL because mm-hmm. they're afraid of what their friends are gonna say. So it's just kind of this weird thing, and that we're doing it to ourselves. And I think I know in one of the other episodes, and slightly different topic, but or a little bit of a, you know, off topic thing.
We're flowing.
There was a I know in one of the other episodes I mentioned that I ran into one of the girls I used to work with. Mm-hmm. I ran into her at a gas station. And I remember in that she was a big girl. She wasn't particularly very, very attractive, but I remember being shocked when she introduced me to her husband, and he was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I think part of my reaction, I guess, was that, you know, I have some of that perfectionism thing in there because. Like I said, he was just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, they were night and day, and mm-hmm. it kind of seems like almost like, well, she's not on your level, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think that's some of that perfection thing that I think we all have we've all kind of been infected with, I suppose.
Yeah, it's almost like this mismatch set. But, yes. And it's interesting because I do think that you see that even in the gay community, where you're just like, how in the world did you get him? And because I think because men certainly have earned this tag of being very visual creatures. But I think there are guys out there that clearly are not turned on by the lean body and all that. And so as a collective, as men, you know, we know what we like, and some of us don't care what other people think about what we like. I think about the professional rugby player. I think he's maybe in England or something like that, and he's dating. He's like in his mid-20s now. He might be 27, 28 at this point, but he's dating this older, overweight, salt and pepper, you know, man, and people are giving him such shit for that. They're just like, you know, and they've basically said, you know, in some quarters, they're like, dude, you're making enough of your own money. Why do you need to be greedy and mess around with the sugar daddy? And it's like, so the only way this guy is worthy of dating someone like this or of a younger guy being in love with him is because he has money. And I mean, we see this a lot where you do have money as an aphrodisiac. It can make an ugly man look a little better. It can yeah. make a very obese man belly disappear, so to speak. And then you also have folks that, no, they like him as is, and the money's an added bonus. But they were giving this guy, not only the older guy, but his partner, they were giving both of them shit. Like, I saw someone say, you know, basically they told the older partner, you need to leave this younger guy alone because he deserves someone hotter than you.
Oh.
See. And I was just like, damn. I mean, it's just, and I, you sit there and you look at that, like, first of all, you know, keyboard warrior, you know, would you really say that shit to his face? First of all, you know, I just feel like certainly anonymity allows us to be really rude and hurtful to people, but I just, that whole,
yeah, it does.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing just blew my mind. And it's like, I do look at these two, and I'm like, yeah, you're a quote-unquote mismatched set, in terms of age and in terms of appearance, and whether, you know, this younger, hunky, you know, professional rugby player certainly looks like he would not traditionally be into the guy he's into, but he's very much into him. And he's the one with the money. So it's like, it blows people's mind. They just feel like you need to, if you're at a certain standard of beauty, you have to stay there. That you can't date, quote unquote, down. It just, yeah. Because I had a conversation with, you know, with like a former friend that had asked me once, and I think I've mentioned this before on the show, where she said to me, where she was trying to hook me up, because everybody's trying to hook me up. And I guess my singledom bothers a lot of people. But she said to me, you know, would you, is dating a guy that works the prepared food counter at some grocery store chain that's not paying us money, so we won't be mentioning them, is that person beneath you? And I kind of looked at her like, beneath me? Like, what the hell does that mean? And I said, no, he has a job. Let's start there. It's like, I was like, I'm not looking at someone like, oh, no, you're a garbage man, you're beneath me. It's like, no. If you love me and I love you, and you make my dick hard, and parts of me get all, you know, then hey. Now, if you the garbage man, as I said before, I'm gonna be like, look, babe, how you doing? Welcome home. Give me them boots. Shower. It's like, if you don't, or if they don't get to shower at work before they go home, I'm like, I need you to, yeah, dust up, blow all that off. Just drop that shit in the hamper. I'll get it in the washer, you know, because I want to make sure my man is ready to go to work the next day. But, you know, it's like, I want a man that doesn't fit some prescribed idea of what perfection is in terms of what he's supposed to look like and everything else. I want a man that knows who he is and is passionate about what he does. And if that is being a sanitation engineer, so be it. If that is making
Then,
sure
yeah.
you have the best pizza, slice of pizza possible, that's what it is. Now, I definitely feel like there's a certain lifestyle I want to live. And if I'm able to sustain it, then that's how we're gonna live. Now, you still gonna need to work. You still gonna need to kick in. It's like, but I'm not gonna sit there and be like, oh no, my man gotta be making six figures because I'm trying to do this and that. It's like, no. I'm like, if we're together, we're a unit. So if there's something I wanna do and I can afford it and you wanna do it as well, then we're gonna go do it.
Yeah,
You
exactly.
know, if it's a $5,000 vacation and you're only kicking in 1,000, thanks, babe. Let's go. It's like, you know, I got the other four. Let's go. It's, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and I think it some of that is probably because folks kind of see me a certain way. Because I do have credentials and these other things, but I'm perfectly okay with a very simple, straightforward, regular guy that knows who he is and loves me hard. I'm cool with that. He doesn't have to be perfect. He doesn't have to be this luminary person. I'm actually more intrigued by the garbage man, frankly.
Yeah, and I think in that episode, I think I might have said something like, yeah, he might, you know, he's taking out the garbage or whatever, doing that as his job, but he probably doesn't come home stressed, you know. And I think that's what I said. So there's advantages.
Yeah, I mean it's fascinating to me that, and I mean we all get caught up in this. I mean, just like you said, I know you're not like this evil person. It's just like, oh my God, what in the world? You know, I know that's not you. And even you looked at this couple and said, how'd that happen? You know,
Yeah. And that's why I said that I think we're all kind of in I mean, a good way to say it is we're all kind of infected with this perfectionism thing that's kind of rained down on us. Because, yeah, it's, like I said, that couple was just completely, complete opposites, you know. And I know, there's no way I was the only one that thought that. And if she, my coworker, had ever brought her husband to the office, I know that all the other girls, it was a very gossipy office anyway, so I know those girls would have been going crazy, you know, if they had seen him and knowing that she got him, and they didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I wonder how many of them would have initially thought, oh, he is using her for her money.
Well, she was working where we were.
Even if she don't really have money like that?
She didn't have it, you know.
Exactly, but they would have been like, he using her in some way. And I'm like, is it possible that he just really is into her? Like, because she is the fucking bomb and she just might happen to have a body fat percentage of 35-40%? Oh, well. It's like, you know, maybe he like all that.
Yeah. Oh, apparently. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, he like to toss a big ass around, you know? And be like, yeah, you know, she can take a shot. You know, let me stop. I'm getting out of hand. But because I'm seeing images of thick thighs and big ass just getting slapped and palmed and just like nibbled and nagged. Yes, you know. But this idea that we have to meet some ideal to be acceptable is just, it's, as one of my colleagues said to me once upon a time, she said, you know, a community that's that obsessed with appearance, when, you know, when it's not like we have to wear a uniform, it's not like we have to have, it's not like, I don't think she said NFL players, but, you know, we're not professional athletes where we have to look a certain way to be able to perform. She's like, we're just people. She's like, to be this obsessed with looks is just sick. And yeah, I really...
She's right. She's right.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like that level of obsession, if you want, I feel like it's setting a lot of people up for failure, because if you're looking for the perfect guy that looks a certain way, you're going to miss out on the right guy looking for this one that has the look. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to send you the documentary, The Adonis Factor. Was it streaming on Netflix?
I looked for it last night. I could not find it.
It was not there. Okay. Yeah, I think they maybe only had it in DVD format. I'll loan you my copy that I have. But I just remember, because it's all about body image and being obsessed with, you know, with gay men in general having the perfect body. And it was, there was a scene in there with the black gay porn actor. I think his name is Mark Williams. And I didn't, you know, he looks really big on camera, but he's actually really short, you know, but he's just a walking muscle. He's, you know, his body is quite phenomenal. And I just remember there was a scene in there with him where he said he was fretting over the fact that he had to make sure that he had his body together before he went to, I think it was the white party in Palm Springs. Like it was circuit season, and he had to make sure his body was absolutely perfect. And I'm looking at this man like, what the hell is wrong with your body? Like, that to me just seemed really unhealthy, because I'm like, is it realistic? How attractive is it for someone to have sex with someone who basically has all the veins and the muscles and the veins, like they look like they're at a bodybuilding competition in a pose down? Like, is that really, really, really attractive? Like, in practice, I recognize he was going to have a weekend full of, you know, unrestrained sex and all that, but how many people really find that erotic? Like, they're out there craving that versus you're clearly a muscular guy in good shape.
You're talking about the veins?
Yeah, well, just the idea, like, his body, he's in very great shape. He works out probably 6-7 days a week. And even after not working out for a week, he still looks fucking incredible. And even he's fretting about the fact that he has to, you know, his body is not where he needs it to be. And I'm looking at him like, what's wrong with it? The only thing he could have done was to been like in a water elimination diet, so to speak, that, you know, bodybuilders do for a pose down or for competition. Yeah. Like where every fiber of muscle, you can see it, and any veins you got going, they are very clearly visible, just like that typical oiled up bodybuilder look. I was like, is that what you're going for, to go to the circuit party? It just seemed to me that the work he put in on his body already was more than sufficient. So I'm like, what ideal are you chasing here? And who's demanding this of you? Is it self-inflicted? Is it something that, you...
No, it's what's we're told.
Well, yeah, but I feel like if he walked into any bar or club... I mean, he is black, so that's going to preclude him from a lot of the, you know, from a lot of white gays' radar. But then he is a porn star, so, you know, the expectation, and the dick is quite, you know, it's quite lovely. so they'll want to sample that. But I'm just saying, as a guy just walking in a bar, he's going to turn heads. He's not going to have any trouble finding someone to go home with, if not several. He could probably be the centerpiece of an orgy or a sex party. And even he's concerned about, do I look good enough? That to me is scary. That's one of those poignant things in that documentary that just really shook me. Because I said, I wish that I was willing to put in the work to look like that. And he's tripping about, you know, and there are going to be guys there that clearly work out, but they don't have nearly the physique that he does. I'm like, are you putting it together for them? And then if these guys are white and they don't have your physique, is this what they demand of you for them to spend their time with you and to share their body with you? Is that the level? You know, I don't know. It's the beginning of a conversation for us, obviously, because we're nearing, if we're going to stay on schedule, we're within a minute. Did you have any closing thoughts on this conversation about perfectionism that may not quite be perfectionism? It's like, what did I figure out to call it?
Yeah. I mean... This could probably be part of another conversation, like you said, but I think this perfectionism is part of the reason why there's all this, you know, racism in the dating apps.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that on, you know, Gay Side Stories, that in their perfectionism episode, I want to say that they brought this up too, you know, about racism,
right,
dating apps, and you have to be there a certain way, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think in order for us to not, you know, self-destruct, I think we've got to try to see if we can break through that and just not keep it going. Because I don't know if it's going to... I think we're harming ourselves by keeping this going.
I agree. You know, and I certainly think there's a cost and a consequence of daring to not be a member of the gem culture, an active participant. It's probably one of the reasons. Well, it's not actually. No, I just don't care for a lot of what West Hollywood offers. It's just not my scene. It's not my aesthetic. I'm definitely more of an eagle, you know, kind of, you know, Levi jeans, you know, aesthetic, not so much the leather, but it could be hot. But yeah, it's just that, you know, that male fembot thing that some people call it with Boys Town, West Hollywood. That's not my aesthetic's never been. So I am a guy with a belly and some handles that you can grip, you know. You can get a handful of me if you need to. I want to slim that down just for health purposes, But yeah, I definitely have encountered more than my share of like really off-putting and sometimes hurtful in experiences dealing with folks that are very much obsessed with that, and the idea that for us to be in conversation, for us to be friends, you have to look like someone I'd actually want to have sex with, which is just crazy because you're not supposed to be fucking your friends. But that's just my thought on it. I don't know. But okay. But yeah, we'll have to definitely pick this one up, because I think having found some new material, we can definitely continue this conversation down the road. And I think we might be on to something with our brother Charles and some of his writing. So yeah, we'll have to do a little more work on Charles. But okay. Yeah. So thank you for indulging me on that. And I guess we'll now move into the listener participation part of the show.
Yes.
Ask Your Brista. And these are letters from some of our female listeners out there. And it's interesting because, you know, our female listeners, they will definitely, they give feedback, whether it's in writing or otherwise. And it's always funny. So the first one here, she is anonymous, so I will name her Marsha. How are we feeling about Marsha?
Okay.
Marsha, okay. So Marsha says that...
Good. No, Marsha's good.
Marsha's good? Okay. So Marsha has a... she did a... I guess what she's calling a no communication or radio silence period with her ex. She did 1 month. And she basically did it because she felt like if after that time frame she contacted him, because she's like, I heard that if you still want to date them, you should contact them after the no contact period or the radio silence is over, just to see if they might also want to date you. And so she said, I didn't say anything harmful, just told him about this show. What show is she talking about? Oh, did we give this advice at some point? It's like, but okay. And said that, you know, it got her thinking about him. And so, and he basically, and she basically got turned down. He said that he may be over her. He felt like he was over her.
After a month.
Yeah. So I guess they broke up. What's weird, because she's saying she did this radio silence with an ex. So I'm guessing now he's an ex. Maybe he wasn't an ex. This is almost like a continuation of last show's letter, where he was like, I need some space, you know, and this is not the same woman. But right. Yeah, it's weird. It's not very well written. I can't help it. I'm a professor. It's just what I do. And the grammar is just hard. I'm having to paraphrase because I'm having to rewrite this in my head. But basically, she reached out to him after a month of no communication, thought that she might feel differently about him because she wanted to get back with him. And she thought that he might feel the same. And this after this break, it would be a good way to kind of restart the relationship, to kind of clear the air and restart. She reached out. He basically said that he feels like he's over her. But she wants to know, does texting him show that, you know, she's interested? And then she's like, even if I didn't say that I was or that I missed him. And so she's concerned that he doesn't seem terribly interested in her. So she's wondering, is texting enough to communicate how she really feels? Because he's not responding. So she's wondering, is texting enough or should she call? What should she do to convey her interest? Because she doesn't believe him when he's like kind of unaffected by all this. Are you picking up my drift here?
How did she contact him? Did she send him a text? You know, did she say?
Yeah, I think she sent a text. Because it sounds like, well, yeah, he did, but he basically said he felt like he was over her and didn't want to resume their relationship. So she's basically asking us, is he feeling that way because she texted instead of calling? it sounds like. I really wish sometimes folks would be a little more clear. That's why we probably need to start looking at letters that are a little longer. Although this one's not short, but it's just so poorly written. That details, and it's not clear. It's like, sweetie, ooh. But okay. Yeah, she wants to know, should she... It sounds like she wants to know, should I have called him? Should I have tried to meet with him face-to-face? Because then he could see my level of interest versus... Texting might seem a little soft and a little impersonal, and he doesn't think I'm serious. That's what she's asking. Or is he just not into her anymore?
See, this is a little bit of a tough one because part of me thinks if he was interested, I don't know if it would matter how she contacted him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he got something from her and he was just interested in seeing her again, I think he'd be happy to hear from her no matter how he did, you know, how she did it, whether it was an email, a text, you know, a phone, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
in my way, I mean, I'm not trying to be pessimistic or anything, but I'm just trying to think, like, I mean, he got the text, at least the first one, wrote back and said he wasn't interested, so... I mean, I don't know if now if you make a phone call or try to see him in person, if that's going to be any different now. Again, my thing is, if he regretted the breakup, however the relationship broke up, whether he did it or you did it, and he was really interested and really, really wanted to come back, I think he would, to me, in my mind, I think someone would jump at the chance to get back. They hated that they even broke up in the first place. So the fact that he wrote back and said he wasn't interested, I'm going to take him at his word.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined as well. I mean, and she doesn't say how he, you know, we don't get any of the, will he sing this way? I mean, it sounds like she's in denial to me, where she's really just not taking any of the clues or hints.
I agree with... He straight out said he wasn't interested. It's not even a hint. He said it. In his response back, the first response she got back.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like if you break radio silence after a month with someone you're in a relationship with, they should be... If they're interested in resuming the relationship, there's going to be... It'll be obvious to you. Even if you have expectations that are unrealistic about what the response is, like you're thinking as soon as you call, he's going to be like waiting on bated breath for you to contact him and, you know, breathless and all this. That could be the case, you know, if he's really that into you. But him also, you know, I guess I feel like, you know, for her, he's done. First of all, Marcia, girl, he's done. Second, I think you need to read the room here. If he were really interested in resuming things with you, he would be like, hey, let's get together, let's do this, let's do that. But he basically said, I feel like I'm over you. That's basically what he said. I don't know how he said it. I mean, was he supposed to curse you out? So it was very clear. It sounds like you might be a little obsessed, sister. So... Take that hint. Hopefully, during that month of not communicating with him, you learn some things about yourself that you can take into your next relationship. It sounds like you may be wrapping up a little too much of your self-worth and value in your relationship with this guy, and you don't want to let it go. But change is a necessary part of falling in love. Whether you're in love with him, he's not in love with you, so you can't continue this. It's a recipe for disaster. So yeah, Marcia, girl, you got to move on. And I mean, speaking to your more basic question, I guess, was the way you contacted him the reason why he's not interested? I don't think so.
I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, if you had called him, he probably still, he would have taken your call. Possibly.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, he may not have. I mean, he may have just ghosted you. But, I mean, if he had taken your call, he still would have told you, no, I don't think it's a good idea for us to get together. I really don't feel that way about you anymore. I don't think we work. We're not a good fit. Whatever it is, you were done, girl. You were done. So, I'm sorry, sister. I feel it for you. I do.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but find you a new man. A new one, girl. Because he out there. I ain't saying it's easy, but he out there. Go and find your new piece. You'll be all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
you ready for help a brother out?
Yes, let's help a brother, because I know he probably need a little love.
Okay, so this week's help a brother out is from Marcus. So we had Marsha for help your brista. Now we got Marcus for help a brother out. So Marcus is 24.
Mm-hmm.
And says he's still having a hard time coming to terms with his sexual orientation. He Aww. Says he personally considers himself bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's never considered himself straight. And when he's introduced, when he's told friends or people that he knows that he's gay, it feels wrong. He says, I've exclusively dated men throughout my adolescence into my 20s, but have never truly felt like that was truly it for me, it in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently in a happy relationship with a man, and we do have sex. I guess I'm scared of being perceived as illegitimate or a wannabe, as if I'm going through a phase. Should this part of my life be settled? Shouldn't this part of my life be settled already? Why am I struggling? Why am I still struggling with this? If someone could just help me by adding their insight, I would really appreciate it.
Okay.
24.
Now, what's his thing with women, though?
He just says he considers himself bisexual, but he's in a relationship with a man now.
Has he been in a relationship with women? Does he say that?
No, he doesn't say that.
I'm confused as to why he's trying to make it. Okay.
Well, so he says being, when he's introducing people, if that he's gay, doesn't feel. It feels wrong.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, he doesn't say how it feels wrong. It seems to me that you're in a relationship with the man. It's happy. It seems like your sex life is good, acceptable. You know, he didn't say it was great. Is something that people
he just says they have sex.
Yeah, he's like they have sex. So it sounds like I don't know, Marcus. It sounds like you might have some sort of I'm going to be careful how I word this. Not so much an issue or a problem. I just wonder if you're wired in that way, where you're just very traditional. You see a person you like, you connect with them, you're in a relationship, sex is good, you know, it either works out or it doesn't, and you move on. The thing that's curious to me, because there seems to be a certain amount of ambivalence around his attraction to men, because saying we have sex just strikes me as a very odd thing to say that in that context, you know what I mean? It sounds like And you haven't mentioned any relationships with women or any...
Well, he said he dated exclusively dated men throughout his adolescence and into his 20s.
Yeah, and I'm like, you haven't dated women, and it sounds like you haven't had very much or any sex with women either, so I'm curious as to the bisexual label. Yeah, this is one we need to be able to talk to Marcus to ask him questions. It just seems like something's a little off there. You may, in fact, be bisexual, but it sounds like you're really... You may be erotically attracted to men, but you don't have romantic attraction to them, which is possible. That happens. Where you may ultimately see yourself being married to and in a long-term relationship with a woman, but you'll have sex with men. Or it could be that you could see yourself in a long-term relationship with a man where you're married to him and occasionally you have sex with women. So you don't want to be in a relationship with a woman that way I think they call it erotic. Oh gosh, it was a really cool term that I heard for it, where you're homo attracted, but it's erotic attraction versus romantic. So it's like one you're okay having sex with, but not a relationship. The other, you're okay doing both. But just so it sounds like in Marcus's case, he probably wants to have a romantic relationship with a man where he's partnered and that's good, but his sex life isn't totally fulfilling and he may need to add a female partner, sexual partner to that, where it may just be exclusively sex. It doesn't sound like he necessarily wants to be in a triad. but having sex with a woman may actually make his sexual reactivity with his partner a bit more complete. That makes any sense. And that's
Maybe, maybe.
speculation.
Yeah. My thing is, I mean, he says that he's 24 and still having a hard time. To me, I mean, I don't know if you should be in so much of a hurry to, well, you already put a label on yourself that you're bisexual, so I don't, I mean, I would just, for me, I would just not worry about the label right now. And I mean, because he said he's never considered himself straight. He's when he's told people he's gay, he doesn't feel right. So it's like there's all these different things that are going around. I think right now I would just go with what's working. Don't, you know, if you're in a relationship with a man and you're happy and it's fulfilling, I don't know if I would worry about the other stuff. I mean, I don't know. Does he want to have sex with women? You know, I don't know. That's something that is going to have to be discussed with the person, with the man he's in a relationship with now. And I'm just curious, does the man he's with now, does he know that Marcus is bisexual? So I think that's, you know, something that has to be, they have to discuss. I mean, he did ask, like, should this part of his life be settled already? I mean, most people probably do know, I guess, where they fit on the spectrum by the time they're 24, but I mean, I don't think there's no deadline, so I wouldn't necessarily worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, you got folks that don't come out until they're in their 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
And it,
so there's no timeline, yeah.
yeah, and I think though for Marcus, it's just I think he needs to have more experiences, and if he is monogamous, you know, if that's just how he functions, then it is going to require him to break up his relationship with this guy that may actually be a good fit and may be the one, but he just needs to have his full sexual appetite satisfied. There are going to be things that this guy cannot do for you that a woman can, and vice versa. So, if you do label yourself as bisexual, you might want to get with the sex part of it to confirm this. I mean, if you're looking at women and saying, oh, I want to know, I could see my head buried between her thighs, then you might want to go and do that. But certainly, you don't want to just go out there willy-nilly cheating on your partner because you made a commitment to him. But I think you may want to talk to your partner about how you're feeling. You may want to have a very frank conversation about your sex life with him because it doesn't sound like it's burning up the barn, so to speak.
Right.
And really just kind of get to the bottom of this because, yeah, for you to say I'm in a relationship with a guy and we have sex, I'm like, you know, normally you would say the sex is great or, you know, it's wonderful, but I feel like something's missing. You just say we have sex. And it just, and maybe I'm putting my stuff on that. But it just sounds very kind of
Well, he says
like
it's a happy
slack.
relationship, so he didn't
Well, yeah, I mean,
say it. So to me, I assume when he says happy that means that, you know, the sex is good too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, and that's possible because you keep coming back to guys, and certainly in terms of societal acceptance and everything, it you're going the harder road. But I think also being a practicing bisexual in some cases is going to be a tougher road because you're going to catch shit from, you know, from the heterosexual community as well as the homosexual community.
Yeah.
And so, and ultimately what they think about you is none of your business. But if you're going to embrace bisexuality, you might want to actually practice the sex part just for confirmation of, are you interested in women's bodies in that way or not? Do you have romantic leanings where you'd want to build a life with a woman? Okay, then I would say that you are definitely bisexual. if you could go either way with that, or if you even would be interested and open to having a building a relationship or intimacy or a sexual relationship with anyone along the gender spectrum, then that makes you pansexual. So I think you need to live a little bit more. But definitely start with an honest conversation with your boyfriend. You're 24. There's a lot of stuff that you still don't know. You're going to discover things about yourself and your sexual interests and appetites well past the time you think you should have it already sorted out. I've met guys that did not realize they like to be tied up and beaten until they were in their 60s. And I, you know, and I even said to one guy, I was like, isn't that like a little late along in the process to realize that's something you're into? Like that it's not just
no,
a...
Not.
Yeah, well, because I, you know, I mean, I was asking an intellectual curiosity because I was, you know, a graduate student interviewing, you know, this guy. And I just, and it wasn't so much a value judgment. Like, my question to him was, isn't it a little late? But did you have any inclination 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago that this is something that you were interested in, that, or did this just evolve over time and you just woke up one day and said, I think I'd like to do that? And so, and for him, it was really something that just, he saw it on, in a video and he's like, ooh, that looks really hot. And he did have that experience and he's like, oh, this is my shit. And so he incorporated that into his, you know, his sexual practice. And so,
oh, okay.
You know, he has, I mean, he had a partner who's probably a husband at this point, assuming he's still alive, or they're still alive. You know, he had a husband that he had been together for what, maybe 15 years at that point. His husband had no interest in that sexual activity, so he kind of had to open it up. And it wasn't, and for his partner, it wasn't, it was a concern, but it wasn't like a deal breaker because he's like, he's not actually having intercourse with these other men. He's basically being, he's being constrained, he's being beaten. And when he gets home, you know, I'll get the alcohol and the Bactine and the Band-Aids, and I'll put my baby back together and put him to bed. And that's what they did. And it was, you know, it was not, because he actually said he could, you know, he could orgasm from just being spanked. And, you know, okay. Being, you know, tied up and suspended from the ceiling or something like that, and whipped, you know, and paddled, and he would shoot all over the floor doing just that. He didn't need to be penetrated, didn't need to suck on anything. So, Marcus, you know,
it's not this, too late.
Yeah, it's not too late. You got time. But I think if you do want to actively explore this, you have got to talk to your partner. You can't just start doing this and betray whatever commitments that you've made to him. So, That would be my advice. You're young. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Now's the time.
All right, Marcus. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck, and Marcus.
Yes, anybody that wants to send letters to us can send them to sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. So that's for Ask Your Brista and Help a Brother Out.
Yes.
And we just might read your question over the air and give you our advice.
That's it. And you know, as you can tell, we got plenty of stuff to say.
Yeah.
And please run your letter through a spell checker. I'm just saying. It confuses me. Ooh, I know. Writing is a lost art. I get it. But okay, but yeah, so we definitely want to be in conversation with you. So we have our Facebook site, which is just Sexual Healing. I think Sexual Healing Podcast from top to bottom. And we also hang out on Twitter. It's Pod Sexual. And we're on the other platforms as well, but we don't use those nearly as much. So those are the two primary ones. And you can find us on pretty much most of the major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. We're finally on Stitcher. SoundCloud is acting a fool, so I'm probably going to pull us off of there. And Google Play Music. You can find us there. And our Spotify application is still pending. It's been under review for about 3 weeks, but I'm not going to talk about Spotify too badly. But yeah. So, reach out, be in conversation, and you know, we look forward to hearing from you. So, did you have any closing words before we sign out this week, Dark Boy?
I think I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good.
Okay, as am I. So, y'all have a great week. Keep it sexual, keep it healing, and always sexy. All right. Yep. Be well, y'all.
Till next time.
Till next time.